If you've been told to pull up your socks, then make sure it's a pair of TNT socks. The TNT shop is now open at tntradio.live. Deconstructing psyops, propaganda, and mainstream media BS. You're with Brian McClain on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yeah, pull up your socks, everybody. If you're here at the Brian McClain Show, you better believe it. Those TNT socks are fireproof and explosion-proof. All right, that might be false advertising, but check out the store over at today's News Talk, tntradio.live. Thank you for joining us. Let's kick off another week of crazy clown world analysis right here on the show. All right, good morning and welcome to the show. We're live from Central Texas here on today's News Talk. Today we'll be joined by Martin Seif to talk about the current state of journalism and American politics in the first hour. In the second hour, we'll be speaking with author Kevin Hallinan, and he's got quite the background. We'll be speaking about his book, Over the Wall. And in the third hour, I'm going to be joined by my new Hour 3 co-host, investigative journalist C.C. Woods. So strap in, everybody. Pull them socks up. We're going to light the fuse today here on today's News Talk. Blinken calls Nord Stream sabotage a tremendous opportunity for Europe. An opportunity for Europe. Well, that's an interesting descriptor for what's gone on. This story continues to be a big point of contention. Who knows what this is going to turn into? It could end up being the, who knows, this could end up being one of the long poles in the tent when it comes to the conflict in Ukraine, the larger conflict, you know, geopolitical conflicts between United States, Russia, NATO, all that good stuff. So Secretary of State Anthony Blinken said on Friday that sabotage of the Nord Stream natural gas pipelines could be advantageous for Europe because the continent may no longer be able to rely on Russian energy. I don't know, German listeners, how's that sound? Does it sound advantageous to you? I heard that 40 to 60% of your fuel come from that pipeline. So I don't know. How's that advantageous? Blinken told reporters that Europe now has a tremendous opportunity to achieve energy independence since it can no longer rely on Russian gas deliveries through Nord Stream 1 and 2 during a press conference. After European nations discovered gas leaks in the Baltic Sea on September 27, President Joe Biden and the EU both said that the leaks were caused by a quote-unquote deliberate act of sabotage. So Blinken there, okay, this is a great opportunity, everyone. Yeah, opportunity, okay. So what's it like out in, let's compare that to California. So when California has all these green restrictions on their power, we even have that here in Texas. That's why we got froze out back in February of 21. You know, how's that feel? How's that work out for everybody? The opportunity to have your power turned off, the opportunity to have your energy prices skyrocket 1x, 2x, 4x, 5x, 1000x. I don't know. I'm seeing all kind of crazy numbers about what we should expect to pay for energy coming up here. And, you know, the American government, Blinken in particular this time, well, yet again, politicians and policymakers pissing on our heads and telling us it's raining and it's a great opportunity to end the drought. All right. Yeah, I don't know about that. Okay, there's also up at the Epoch Times, up at Epoch TV, there's a live video you might want to check out. Evidence that the Nord Stream was intentionally destroyed. Energy crisis sparks new hostilities. This is going to be an ongoing topic. Clearly. Another one. UK Defense Secretary promises two ships to protect underwater cables. So that's Defense Secretary Ben Wallace right there. Says the British government plans to commit two specialist ships to the task of protecting vital underwater cables, which could be attacked by Russia or other foreign hostile powers. Do you think so? Well, yeah, that's probably a good idea because some hostile power put four sets of explosives on Nord Stream 1 and Nord Stream 2 and have completely changed the already sketchy energy supply chain and the economics of the whole thing to the EU. And that's going to hit Germany first. It's also going to affect Poland and other countries in the EU. So, you know, this is, of course, yeah, it's probably a good idea, UK Defense Secretary, because if that was indeed some sort of NATO operation that happened in Nord Stream 1 and Nord Stream 2, you might want to keep an eye out for retaliatory moves there, because if NATO's down there under the water blowing up stuff like that, critical infrastructure, well, you might expect the same in kind. So I don't know. We'll see. Stay tuned, everybody. We're going to keep an eye on this one. For a complete list of shows and our schedule offered on TNT Radio, simply visit our website at tntradio.live. We serve up the latest live news and current affairs presented by a host of credible and expert commentators who can separate fact from fiction and truth from propaganda right here on TNT Radio.
Talking the talk.
I like the conversation.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, welcome. We're going to welcome Darren Denslow right now. He's a TNT news producer, and we're going to run through this headline. Darren, welcome to the show. How you doing?
I'm really good, Brian. Great to be on your show. I hope you're well,
thank
too.
You for joining. Yeah, thank you for joining us, man. Looking forward to starting off this new week with you here. So we got a headline to cover. Russian troops and Donbas forces have withdrawn from their defensive positions in the town of Krasny Liman, and the Russian Defense Ministry confirmed in a statement on Saturday. So what is going on with this story here, Darren?
Okay, so this has been a new story that's been developing over the weekend about further Ukrainian incursions into what was previously held Russian territory in the Donbass region. This news comes a day after President Vladimir Putin signed treaties on the accession of the Donetsk People's Republic and the Luhansk People's Republic into Russia, as well as the accession of Russian-held Kherson and Zaporizhzhia regions, which also declared independence from Ukraine. Obviously, these referendums have been denounced widely through Western media as an illegal vote, and it's not a proper democratic process. That they've been a sham is the word that's been heard on CNN and MSNBC and the leftist corporate media. And also there's the further developments of that Putin has been announcing his partial mobilization of calling up 300,000 reservists. So these Ukrainian incursions have happened over the weekend, and we've had lots of reports of military successes by Ukraine in recent weeks, stuff that's been very hard to truly verify. But this move comes as Ukrainian forces mounted a large-scale offensive targeting the North Donetsk region of Ukraine. So this is in the east of Ukraine. And the town concerned is, which you pronounce correctly, it was called Krasny Liman. This is the old Soviet name for Lyman. Krasny Liman means, or Krasny means red in Russia. So the head of the Donetsk People's Republic, the DPR, a guy called Denis Pushilin, has come out calling the advance by Ukrainian forces as alarming, that the area had been circled by Ukrainian troops, and that the Russian ministry had said that due to the emerging threat of encirclement, the Allied troops have withdrawn from the settlement of Krasny Liman and deployed to more advantageous positions. About 200 Ukrainian soldiers were lost, and a handful of tanks and light infantry fighting vehicles were also lost. There's also been other towns of Yampol and Drobyshevnov, also in the Donetsk region, have also been captured, or reportedly captured, by Ukraine. Now, I'm reporting from an RT story, and I would like to make the point that I'm in the UK. Finding any accurate or credible information from any of the what we might consider mainstream sources in the UK is almost impossible. RT has been censored, so has other Russian-affiliated media. So that's the RT report. There's been a withdrawal of Russian troops from key areas in the north of Donetsk because of overwhelming Ukrainian forces. How have they reported this particular story in the mainstream? Warlord thug Ramzan Kadyrov Chechen leader demands Kremlin pound Ukraine with nuclear weapon after Russia's latest embarrassing retreat caused loyalists to turn on tyrant. And I could read the rest of the Daily Mail article, Brian, but I'm pretty sure you are familiar with the type of language that would be used. And so my first point to you, my friend, is who do we believe? We have this quite sensible article from RT, and then we have the bombastic, hyperbolic, nuclear Armageddon article, and that was from the Daily Mail. But they're all saying the same in the UK. Should we be is it just a propaganda war here with these types of narratives? Or should we be really looking and saying, actually, Western propaganda is always going to push that Russia is losing, and obviously Russia is going to say the opposite? What's your position on this? On this particular topic with Ukraine advances in Russia.
First of all, it seems to me if Russia wanted to cause massive infrastructure failure and massive civilian casualties, we would have already seen this. It could have happened quite quickly. And from my vantage point, I try to look at both the MSM, the mass media cartel, as I prefer to call them, and and the foreign sources. If I can find RT somehow, go through all the steps to light up a VPN and get on that right IP address, I can actually see what their side is saying. And I agree with you. I believe that the reporting makes more sense out of Russia, but of course, you have to leave a little bit of room for the propaganda war and the information war. But I try to temper that by looking at public Telegram channels, which is becoming problematic now also, because they're now forcing Telegram channels to shut down. And I think that the strong arm of global censorship and propaganda has been applied to Telegram in a way that they can't really get out of. So now you have problems getting RT on Telegram and a number of other ones. But I have been keenly watching what's going on the ground via Telegram channels from all sides. And it appears to me, just from, reading and watching everything that I can, that the Western media is completely engaging in extraneous fear pornography with all of this nuclear talk. And it also seems to me that we don't need to have a nuclear war for this to end up with us, the normal people, the normal sandwich eaters and soup eaters of the planet, ending up in a wartime economy, which would, obviously that's better than nuclear annihilation, but still a wartime economy will kill a lot of people and will bring a lot of austerity. So that's kind of where I'm at with it right now. I try to just, watch all of the feeds, but especially after the Nord Stream destruction, like I was talking about in the intro there, there is definitely some war maneuvering going on here.
And with this Nord Stream attack, sort of just moving away from what I was discussing on the advances by Ukraine, the people who carried out that attack were all sort of doing the whodunit game. But what I think the thing that we're not discussing is, it doesn't matter who did it. It doesn't matter if it was Russia or America or the UK or China or Poland. You could go on and on and on and not ever come up with an answer. The people who did it want war. And I think that's quite clear. That this is the severity of this attack is almost unparalleled, and the consequences are the same. They're quite devastating, and that there will be potentially retaliation, as you just discussed in your editorial. But it's quite clear that the people who did it want war, and if they don't succeed this time, are they going to move to the next level in order to achieve their aims? Could that be nuclear war? Could they be setting the stage for a false flag attack for which they could then blame Russia and make Putin that titled bad man with international pressure on him, which could possibly bring the end to his leadership and the fragmentation of Russia as a result of their collapse? So there's a lot of issues here that are being undiscussed. We're all going, who did it? And not really thinking of true consequences of what's actually happened.
Yeah, that is a hallmark of something to be very cautious of in the media when something really big happens and it immediately becomes who did it instead of what happened first. We still don't know what happened. All we have is information from seismic information from the Geological Society in Denmark, I believe, or in the Netherlands somewhere. And, you know, we already know that there was an explosion down there under the water, but we need to know where it came from, what kind it was. And then once we know that, we can start talking about who done it. But folks, when you see the who done it come out before the what happened, red flag, big red flag. Yeah. And all this talk about nuclear threat, man, Darren, I don't know, man. I don't know. I'm going to take a positive outlook on that and say I don't think they want to do that, but I'm not going to rule it out, my friend.
I want to be with you and say it's going to be a positive outlook because I live in the largest military live. About 1 mile from the largest military base in Western Europe, and we're probably number two target in the UK. So I also don't want, obviously. And why is nobody trying to stop this conflict? Why is the pressure not being relieved? Why are they not negotiating? We hear that negotiations were pulled off or pushed off by Boris Johnson when an agreement had been reached. Why do the two sides seem to be determined to fly towards each other with the both seriously nuclear armed countries? The one thing we don't want on this planet is a war between America and Russia. It's the one thing we don't want above everything else. So
yeah, exactly.
Anyway, lovely
exactly.
talking to you, Brian.
All right, great. Thank you, Darren. We'll have you back next hour. We'll do it again. And thank you for everything you do over there. We'll see you soon. And with that, we're going to take a quick station break here. We'll be right back with today's news talk.
You should hear what Rick Munn's talking about.
The pound sinks to a record low against the dollar, and the UK economy is predicted to flatline next year as the PM talks about the mini budget on Friday. It wasn't a mini budget. It was a maxi budget. It was a monster budget. It was a gargantuan budget. It was the behemoth of all budgets. It has tanked us down the toilet. So please, spare me with the mini-budget business. And there's reasons why this quasi-Kwarteng character did what he did, apparently, allegedly. The word on the street is Liz Truss has a lot of banker friends who were shorting the pound last week. That means they were betting it would fall. And Kwasi donged us with the budget. And guess what? It's tanked to an all-time low. So if that story is true, then someone's made a lot of money off the back of Liz Truss's budget. Imagine that. A politician's friends making money off what the politician does. Who would have thought it?
Rick Munn is locked and loaded on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Public school is the instituted agency of socialism throughout every community.
The U.S. government has no authority to have any role in education.
We're going to lose our very republic if we don't stop this indoctrination of children in government schools.
What happened to us in China can happen here.
Have one kind of education and then call it equity.
It's about outcomes. It's about trying to force us all to be equal.
I think we're going to have a race civil war in our hands.
We are exposing kids to pornography as early as kindergarten. Parents just don't know.
No, not anymore. Not anymore. Parents need to wake up. They don't have the interests of your child at heart.
Truth and Lies in American Education at SalemNow.com.
When the whole world seems turned upside down, we sort through it together. Lighting the fuse for freedom. TNT Radio.
That's right, TNT Radio, TNTRadio.live. Check out the store, check out the mobile app, check out the What's on Events calendar, check out the episodes area, the hosts area. We got everything laid out for you there in a way that makes it very, very convenient to listen to TNT and to find anything you may have missed. So, yes, check us out on the web. All right, our first guest here is a senior fellow of the American University in Moscow and a former senior foreign correspondent for the Washington Times. He's a historian and a three-time Pulitzer Prize nominee for international affairs. He began an association with catastrophism and ancient history, serving eventually as one of its senior editors over there at the Society for Interdisciplinary Studies. And yes, he has a master's in modern history from Oxford University. His name is Martin Seif. Martin, welcome to the show, and thank you for joining us. How are you today?
Very well indeed, Brian. A pleasure to be with you.
It's a pleasure to be with you, too. Thank you for taking the time. So I want to talk to you a little bit about the state of journalism and media today in our contemporary world, because you have a lot of experience in these realms. So just sort of generally speaking, to get us set up here, anything you might want to say about yourself that I might have missed, and tell me what your take is on the state of journalism right now, if we can even still call it that in this country.
Well, it's in a chaotic state, and actually I see a lot of room for optimism, of which you and TNT are a major part, Brian, because what we have been seeing in the last 20 or 30 years, and you know this very well, I think you've lived it in your own life, is that the old giants, the old dinosaurs of print journalism and media journalism, the big American TV networks, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Los Angeles Times, have withered on the vine. They have become sclerotic fossils presenting old established conventional wisdoms, never challenging them. And they have lost the fact that in the greatness of the American media up to the 1950s and 60s was its diversity, its debate, its even abusiveness with itself. You had in New York City alone 8 to 10 major daily newspapers up to the 1950s and 1960s. Today you have only 2 or 3 major newspapers, and only one of them, the New York Times, is supposedly a serious newspaper. The structure of American journalism changed in the 1950s and 60s. This did not happen by conscious design or conspiracy. It happened because of the interaction of economic forces, mainly television coming in. People stopped reading so many newspapers, and an enormous amount of power ultimately went to the major newspaper of record that was published in the morning, that then carried all the basic advertising, especially the classified advertising of newspapers. So this had huge transformational effects that took a full generation to work through. Instead of newspapers and radio stations being manned by scrappy, insecure, often angry people with chips on their shoulders who make the best journalists, and who would argue with each other and would compete with each other to expose the news, you had instead journalism became a single towering pyramid or building that everybody worshipped in every major media market. So you would have one definitive newspaper or news source in each media market. Excuse me. And they became the newspaper or source of record. And this changed the psychology of everything. And that's the problem. Instead of a culture of challenge, of anger, of argument, which you need to have open debate, you had a culture of deference, a courtier's culture.
Right. Yeah, it certainly has turned into something like that. That's I like your take on that. You know, that's a high level take right there. And it because a lot of people when there's a lot of people that are sort of new to what I call news hounding right now because of what's happened in the last 2 years, you know, especially during 2020. People were told they were not essential anymore and that they had to stay home, and people started getting sick of that paradigm, you know, that sort of second paradigm, if you will, that you just described, and took a whole generation to sort of, you know, institutionalize it. But in the process there, we lost a lot of our ability. Like you said, it became sort of just a single source of, like this giant pyramid that is worshipped, and it changed the psychology of everything. I think, do you think that there, because a lot of people, when they come into this, they get away from mainstream media and they start looking at alternative media, they start looking at independent media, they come to places like TNT and other places, And as you know, sir, the internet is awash with all kinds of stuff about how this happened, why this happened, who benefits from it. And there's a very generalized conspiratorial view that, you know, the sort of like the Operation Mockingbird view, that combined with, the Obama administration changing the Smith-Mundt Act, removing the Smith-Mundt Act, and thereby legalizing, propagandizing to the American people. So a lot of people that come into this new, they find out things like that, and they feel like, oh, well, all of a sudden, you know, this happened and this changed, and now this whole thing is just evil. And there's nuggets of truth to all that. But what you just laid out there is sort of the evolution that led us to this place where we would become so vulnerable that things like this could happen. So keep that in your back pocket for a moment. I'll take your response on that on the other side of a quick headline here. We're going to go to TNT for a headline, and we will be right back.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. Hundreds of thousands of Florida state residents are still without power after Ian made landfall last week. The presidents of 9 NATO countries came together on Sunday to express their support for Ukraine's membership bid and also to urge allies to substantially increase their military support to Kyiv. The UK's chief of the defense staff warns Moscow could use space-based weaponry to target Western infrastructure.
Are you enjoying listening to TNT Radio?
Do you think we're doing a good job?
Then please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab, or Getter? Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back. We're joined by Martin Seif here. Martin, what do you think about what I said before the headlines there? What kind of vulnerabilities may have opened up during that period where this shift in journalism happened that you've identified, you know, between the 50s and, you know, now?
I think they are enormous, and they are very dangerous and destabilizing to society. And I think very strongly, as I say, Brian, that the underlying cause of them is in one sense very simple, but on the other hand, has not been remotely faced by our media tycoons at all. We have a much smaller, base of the mainstream media. And this is reflected in the motto of the New York Times, a very famous motto that they are proud of, but a very revealing motto. What is the motto of the New York Times? It is all the news that's fit to print. But who decides what is fit to print? They do. And this is crucial. I saw your face light up with exactly with appreciation and recognition precisely on that. Once you have people deciding what news is fit to print, then you have censorship. You no longer have democracy. You no longer have freedom of speech or freedom of debate. And this is a very ultimately sinister development. There is a line I am fond of by one of the most brilliant and potentially destructive people in American history, but there's no doubt that he was a brilliant man. And that is a major political rival of President Franklin Roosevelt in the 1930s. The late Huey P. Long, who was governor of Louisiana, senator of Louisiana, and was shot dead supposedly by an angry opponent, though most probably by the drunken incompetence of his own guards at the time in 1935. Actually, I know a great deal about the story and will happily go into it on some future occasion if you or your audience are interested. It's a fascinating story. In a way, it's an anti-conspiracy theory story because Huey Long created a culture of paranoia and violence around himself, hired guards who were not well trained. They were loyal to him, but they were not well trained. They were slobs. And eventually, when an innocent doctor who he wanted to see approached him, the guards cut loose, killed the doctor, shot Huey by accident in the crossfire, and then covered up their own incompetence. which of course is something that security forces do all the time, covering up their own incompetence in one field or another. But Huey Long was a brilliant guy, certainly had wit, and he was once asked, could fascism take over America? Great question. Yeah. And he replied, excuse me.
Yeah, no problem.
Have a call. Sure it can. Only it'll be called anti-fascism. Fascism can take over America, but it will be do so in the guise of anti-fascism. And what did we see after 9/11? We had the Bush administration bring in the infamous Patriot Act, shutting down freedom of speech and democracy in America in the name of defending it.
Yeah.
That is where we have been since.
Right. And it's amazing how, you know, it's amazing how this goes back to 9/11 so many times, so many conversations end up right back there when we're looking at the state of media, when we're looking at the state of open discourse, communication, conversation, being able to actually enjoy our First Amendment. You know, they've shut our First Amendment down so much without us even knowing it. I mean, now it's common knowledge that censorship is a thing and that the technocrats in Silicon Valley in collusion with governments are and Fortune 100 agencies and NGOs. I mean, we could go on and on. Are censoring people. But like you said, you pointed out the New York Times motto, all the news that's fit to print. That's where it all starts. Someone's deciding what is fit to print. Someone is handing little yellow cards to newscasters when it comes time to kill a story right before they're going to go live with it. And then you get some useless puff piece over it and we never get to have the discussion. And now it's to the point where, you know, they've taken that to this is normal. They've normalized it. You know, they've normalized it by going up against Alex Jones and others like him. Many of the people, many of the good people doing research on the pandemic have been shut down. Very professional people who are qualified to speak about it have been shut down. So that's all become normal now. This idea of deplatforming, character assassination, demonetizing, shadow banning by algorithm, and now lawsuits. You know, I mean, they put Jones up on trial for a lawsuit. So now it's illegal to offend people. Pretty much, we're starting to find our government and our media and our social media normalizing this idea that we can have punitive measures put against us, legal punitive measures put against us for offending someone. So. It seems like we've kind of gone way beyond what the initial kind of nudging point was here. What do you think?
I agree with you completely, Brian, and I wish I did not. I came to America from Britain, and Britain and America that I lived in flourished in, free countries, both of them, but both going in the wrong direction. But America much later in the day than Britain. In Britain, even within a comfortable, tolerant, democratic nation, which it has always been, there has been establishment overall control, overseeing even a bunch of competing newspapers and major media sources in London. It's been there. The British legal system has cracked down on free speech and always did to a far greater and more outrageous degree than the American system ever did. You always had a lot of freedom, especially once the internet got going. You had freedom of expression in America to a far greater degree than you had in Britain. So that even major scandals in British history could be effectively covered up, such as the role of two later prime ministers, Anthony Eden and Harold Macmillan, in shamefully sending back hundreds of thousands of refugees from Stalin to be slaughtered by him at the end of World War II. And this was a huge and outrageous story, virtually unknown until Alexander Solzhenitsyn exposed it in the Gulag Archipelago. And a friend of mine, Count Leo Count Nicholas Tolstoy, the great grandson of the famous legendary novelist and an outstanding historian and scholar himself, exposed this story. And because he exposed the story and embarrassed the British establishment, completely spurious legal action was taken against him. That actually could not have been taken in America at that time. And he was falsely accused of and convicted of in the courts of supposedly libeling individuals who were very high in the British system, as I say, including two former prime ministers. And yet the facts of what Nick Tolstoy exposed in his work were completely factual. He said no lies. He did not falsely accuse anyone. He was the one who was falsely accused. And yet he, his wife, and his children were impoverished by the actions of the legal system in Britain. Now, that could not have happened in America at the time. But since the Patriot Act, it can happen all too easily. And this is why the raid on former President Trump's house in Mar-a-Lago is so sinister and so important. And one does not have to defend everything Trump stood for and stands for. But he makes a very central point. If extrajudicial action can be brought against the former president of the United States, who is possibly free from the threat of it? Who is free from the threat of it? And he is absolutely right to make this point.
Yeah, yeah, that's the really scary part. That is the scary part. And, you know, you ask the question, if they can do it to the former president, well, who else can they do it to? And we're starting to see the answers to that. We're starting to see the answers because it's been completely normalized now that our own tax dollars can be taken from us to hire more tax collectors to try to investigate us. And that's coming in the wake of seeing what happened during the Tea Party. You know, we had IRS weaponized against Tea Party. We've seen multiple federal agencies now weaponized against various conservative groups of people, even parents that go to school board meetings and simply want to ensure that their kids are having an appropriate education, the one that they think you know, they should be involved with, and not to allow people to change this education system in a way that they find detrimental to their kids. Let me take one more station break here, Martin, and we'll be right back, everybody, with today's news talk.
Are you ready to start paying for climate reparations? Yes, that is apparently a thing.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
Pakistan's climate minister demands climate reparations due to bad weather. Pakistan's climate minister said historic injustices have to be heard, and there must be some level of climate equation, adding, global warming is the existential crisis facing the world, and Pakistan is ground zero. Okay, how to respond? First off, there is no increase in extreme weather on timescales globally. Hasn't happened. 30, 50, 100-year timescales, extreme weather, hurricanes, floods, droughts, tornado, wildfires have either been no trend or declining trends. If anything, the truth is that as carbon dioxide has risen in the atmosphere, extreme weather has declined. So the case for climate reparations is non-existent. But this isn't about the science, it's politics. For the Morano Minute, this is Mark Morano on TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative, this is Viewpoint.
Natural disasters may seriously threaten civilization in future, yet the mainstream media peddles a pseudo-scientific man-made climate crisis. A major cosmic event would provide a real challenge for civilization. An asteroid strike may induce an ice age and major crop failures. And a solar coronal mass ejection that knocks out much of the world's electrical and communications systems would make today's problems look trivial. A solar coronal mass ejection hit Earth's magnetosphere in September 1859 and induced the largest geomagnetic storm on record. People in northeastern United States could read a newspaper by the light of the Aurora Borealis. telegraph systems failed, and some telegraph operators received electric shocks. If such a solar storm happened today, power grids, GPS systems, telephones, and the internet could be disabled for an extended period.
Mainstream media censors, smears, and intimidates those telling the truth.
We mandate that the truth be told.
Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Did anybody have the feeling back in 2001 when the Patriot Act came out that this is not good? This is not right. This is not American. Or was everybody just ready to accept that because of the absolute media blitz that we got in the wake of what happened in September of that year and the following months in the lead up? I don't know. I myself was duped by a lot of that at first. It's a powerful machine. I'm joined by Martin Seif. Martin, it's a powerful machine, the media. And before the break there, we were talking about the Mar-a-Lago raid and how if these sort of political powers can be levied against a former president, what does that mean to the rest of us? I think that is a very, very poignant question. And we're finding out, you know, we've got a lot of examples. We can look through the Mueller investigations. We can look through the J6 investigations. We can look through the abuses of the ATF, the IRS, the FBI, numerous other lettered agencies, and we can kind of see the trajectory here. We can see where this is all headed. And now we have the added layer of social media, which has in many ways been a wonderful tool for a lot of us, but also has acted and continues to act as a bit of a feedback loop, a propagandic feedback loop that is controlled by algorithms and social acceptance and, you know, just sort of normalcy bias. So I think we've described the dangers really well here. I'll take your comments on the addition of social media and how that affects us. But I do want to get to the positive part, because I think if I'm tracking you, we're kind of leading up to the point where everybody's starting to realize these things that you're talking about. A lot of people have read Gulag Archipelago, and a lot of people have been paying attention and are now looking back on the Patriot Act with an appropriate set of context under them, instead of just the fear pornography of, you know, war and guys in caves who can hijack airplanes and this kind of stuff. So I think people are walking away from the toxic mass media cartel en masse and coming places here and hearing fabulous conversations like this one I'm having with you. So back to you, sir.
Well, thank you so much, Brian. And you just made a point which I privately thank you from the bottom of my heart for, because you admitted you were taken in uncritically by so much of the mass reaction after 9/11. So was I. I was one of the top executives at United Press, news executives at United Press International at the time. I was a 15-year veteran of Washington insider journalism at that time. I have now 36 years experience as a Washington professional journalist, wearing different hats for different news organizations at the time. In fact, I used to introduce myself in Washington, saying tongue-in-cheek to people, "Hi, my name is Martin Seif. I work for the Bin Ladens, and I used to work for the Bin Laden family, and I used to work for the Moonies." Because when I worked for the Washington Times, still an eminent conservative newspaper in America, and it was owned and is still owned by the Unification Church, and there's a strong South Korean influence. And far from being a sinister influence in America, conservatives in particular always welcomed this, because the Washington Times was always independent of the liberal mainstream media. And a principle that goes back to John Wilkes, not John Wilkes Booth, but the original John Wilkes in England, the notorious partier, libertine, the Hugh Hefner of his time, and the basic founder of popular, free, independent journalism in England and the Western world in the 1750s, is that you have to have independent voices that are ready to challenge the government of the time and the establishment of the time. And if you don't have diverse independent voices, you do not have freedom and you do not have liberty. So the more voices you have that are ready to critique and be critical of the establishment, whether it is a Bill Clinton establishment or a George W. Bush establishment. Actually, we go back to my old friend, Senator Huey Long again. Huey Long claimed that the Republican and Democratic parties in the 1930s were just flip sides of the same coin. He was actually wrong, but the idea is more true now than it was then. And the way Huey Long described it was, you had two choices you could buy in your politics. You could have high populorum, or you could have low popularum. And they're both the same thing. Now, there were major differences between President Franklin Roosevelt, who I greatly admire, and the Republican leadership of the time. But having said that, it was FDR who pioneered using what you pointed out, Brian, the use of the IRS as a political weapon to target his political opponents on both the left and the right. That didn't start with Bill Clinton, didn't start with George W. Bush, certainly not with President Trump. It started with the revered President Franklin Roosevelt himself. And when it comes to Russiagate, Russiagate is a lie. We are told the 2016 election was stolen by Vladimir Putin. It is a lie. It is ridiculous. A drunken Hillary Clinton cooked up this fantasy when she was still reeling from the shock at 2 to 3 a.m. in the Javits Center in New York City, talking with her right-hand man, John Podesta. And there was no truth to it. By contrast, if we simply look at the voting results of the 2020 election, they are very dubious. When you look at the congressional results for both House and Senate elections, you have a narrowly divided America. Everything can swing on a dime. The country really appears to be divided 50% down the middle. Very close congressional races, very close Senate races. Overall voting for House and Senate, almost identical. And while individual races obviously had some dubious results pumped into them, by and large, this appears to have been accurate. But then you look at the presidential outcomes. At first, when the results come in, Trump is leading. And then in one major state after another, all of a sudden, the urban results come in last, which itself is very dubious because it's rural results that should come in last because they are counted and collated from widespread areas, urban areas. Ought to be the first results to come in and be confirmed. Yet they are held off till the last, and all of a sudden, huge floods of votes come in, and there's a 7 million landslide for President Biden. And yet there is no indication of this in support for President Biden before the results come in. When you look at Trump rallies, and I was monitoring and watching all of those rallies of both Biden and Trump, Biden routinely attended rallies of less than 10,000 people, often only 2,000 or 3,000 people or less. Trump routinely spoke to enormous rallies, 25,000 people in the stadiums, another 20,000 to 25,000 people watching outside the stadiums, and an additional 25,000 to 50,000 people watching live online at the time, if you bothered to look, which nobody in the mainstream media did, but I did at the time. And yet, there is no evidence whatsoever of a landslide for Biden. And yet suddenly it magically appears from nowhere. Yet it is never translated into coattails in the House of Congressional races. Why not? Why only for the presidency a landslide? Why did President Biden have no coattails whatsoever, which is unheard of in political history going back to the 1820s, 200 years? It doesn't make sense, and it is unprecedented. And it is never questioned in the mainstream media, never once. No skepticism, no open debate is allowed, ever, anywhere. On the contrary, outside media sources, there was one, ironically, a Russian media source that I wrote for that was shut down by the State Department and the Department of the Treasury. They sanctioned it. And what was the fault of this fault? for pumping Russian propaganda? Well, theoretically, yes, but they had one unforgivable sin, which actually I was not part of, but I was part of the general shutdown anyway. And what was this unforgivable sin? It was to question the sanctity of the 2020 elections. And yet the same people who were outraged at the sanctity of the 2020 elections were questioned, had thrown lies and doubt on they had in the terms, in regular American legal terms, as you regularly see in every Perry Mason episode, they themselves had opened the door. They had established the precedent because in 2016, they questioned the results of a legitimate election because they were determined Hillary Clinton could win. It was inconceivable to them that the American public could prefer Donald Trump. And who swallows these lies and who does not? People without degrees in America remain sensible. George Orwell predicted this would happen 190 years ago, 80 years ago, in 1984. He has Winston Smith write in his novel 1984, if there is hope, it will come from the working class people. It will come from the people they despise and call the proles. The educated classes in 1984 eagerly swallow all the lies. And this is what we see here. People with degrees, people who read the New York Times and take it seriously, who watch PBS, they swallow all the Kool-Aid. They're the ones who drink the Kool-Aid. Ordinary American people, whether of the right or the left, who do not have degrees, who work with their hands, who work in industry, who work in agriculture, who work in the service industries, they are the people who are feared because they do have common sense still, and they do not live in fantasy worlds fed to them by PBS.
Yes, yes, absolutely. I'm noticing this too. There is a massive upswell in real grassroots sort of American democracy, if you will, or just American trying to get back to a sense of normalcy, trying to escape this new abnormal. I love what you've pointed out here. I really appreciate it. You know, last week I had a woman named Leah Hoops on the show, and you may be familiar with her already, but she, for anyone that missed that show, she was a poll watcher in the 2020 election out in Pennsylvania. And as you know, Pennsylvania was one of those, states, one of those, it was a big one, right? And she and her colleagues, they had done the research on their local precinct. They knew that the precinct that she was viewing had about 40 to 43% of the votership in the state. And they watched as they were shut out of any sort of counting that could see, you know, counting that could actually be done and verified by them. They have documentation, they have videos, they have audio, they have they wrote a whole book about it. It's called Parallel Election, and it unequivocally shows so much corruption in that Pennsylvania vote. And there's a similar set happening with the Georgia vote. And those two states alone would have made it a completely different outcome from what I understand. She said that she had federal agents knock on her door that were looking into the insurrection events of J6 and trying to say that, just like you said, you know, for anyone that thinks, you know, oh, the 2020 election was not dubious. It was absolutely dubious. It was so dubious that, you know, books and movies and documentaries are being written on them. And the mass media cartel will tell us, people like you, people like me, anyone out there on Facebook, any concerned citizen, anyone that showed up at the Capitol, you're all risking being labeled an insurrectionist, a liar, a MAGA republic, a MAGA terrorist. I mean, the things that they call everybody and the way that they treat people who simply want to understand what happened is insane, Martin. It's absolutely insane. I got about 1 minute left before we got to go to top of the hour headlines, but sure. I want to thank you for everything you do. I want to thank you for your time. I'd like to invite you to come back sometime in the near future, and I'll hand it over to you for any final thoughts you may have for the audience.
I think you've nailed it, Brian. It's been a pleasure and a privilege to be with you. I agree with you 100%. And I had to come a long way in my life to agree with you 100%, as I'm sure you have too. It would have been inconceivable to me 20 years ago that we would be seeing the problems in our country we are seeing now. And yet they were being lined up for us even then, if we had had the wit, which I did not at the time, to see it. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Martin Seif, everybody. That's Martin Seif. There he goes. Joining us here on the Brian McLean Show on today's News Talk. What an amazing conversation, you know. That makes me feel like I'm not alone in that, hey, you know, I've been tricked by these people. I've made, you know, life decisions and political decisions based on what unfortunately turned out to be propaganda. And, you know, that's what we want to fix over here. That's what we want to work towards. We want to work towards everybody having a context that's based in something close to reality, where we can achieve freedom of speech and that life, liberty, and happiness pursuit that we are all guaranteed right here in the United States, and that we would like to see guaranteed for everyone worldwide. Martin Seif, once again, thank you very much. We're going to top of the hour news. We'll be back on the other side.